Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
As we enter into the Nine Milk Days, the traditional period where observant Jews don't eat meat for a period of 9 days, we wanted to understand if fake meat is any healthier. I'm a bit of a meat eater myself, but we wanted to try and understand this. Peter Gordon is the Chief Executive Officer at the South African Meat Processors Association. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard, and morning to all your listeners.
So it's obviously become very, very trendy to go beyond meat. Even the language, even the description of it is, you know, we've evolved so much that we're beyond eating meat. That's kind of the idea and the marketing style. Is it actually healthier to eat this type of food rather than real meat?
Well, I think that, there's no doubt that a lot of the good brands, you talk about Impossible and Beyond Beef, they've done a lot of research and they've certainly tried very hard to replicate all the qualities that meat, natural meat has. And I think that they've done a fairly good job. But one must always bear in mind that, you know, you have replaced a very nutritious protein source in meat with a replica, and they use things like soy, pea, protein, flour to try and create some of the elements that have been lost in meat, and they then add often vitamins to the recipe. They use things like xanthan gum to give it some texture, so to bind all the ingredients together, and then very often they'll use things like coconut oil or coconut fat to replace that sort of moisture that you'll get, that sort of it's quite hard to replicate the natural meat taste. So what they have to do is really create a recipe of ingredients and do two things. One, to give it flavor. Two, to give it texture and substance, so it's got some body to it. And then obviously it's got to cook up and it's got to present decently to you, the consumer, on the plate. So is it as nutritious? It's hard for me to say. I think a nutritionist would have to comment on that, but I do think that they're hard pressed. Generally, your vegetarian or vegetable only products are hard pressed to replicate all the qualities and all the vitamin ingredients that you would get from a normal piece of protein. So, you know, I think it's a case of as a plant based eater, you'd need to possibly manage your diet quite carefully with these products. You could eat them on their own. All the time. I think you'd have to supplement with maybe vitamins and other products to surround the meat analog with possibly vegetables or other products with high protein and energy content components in it.
Do you see a change in consumer behavior around the demand for meat products?
In South Africa, not so much. I think by and large, if affordability allowed South Africans to eat as much meat as they wanted to, they'd eat considerably more than they do at the moment. What we are seeing, certainly amongst the high LSM, so the more affluent consumer, and certainly with the younger generation, we are seeing a move away from, let's call it, traditional eating habits, and meat analogs are certainly becoming relevant in their diet and their eating behavior. But certainly I think at the middle and lower end of the spectrum, not so much. Having said that, a lot of those people eat very little protein as it is, purely because of affordability.
Yeah.
And they rely on things like rice and maize meal as a base staple for most of their meals anyway. So by default, I suppose a lot of South Africans are eating less meat than they would like to. And that's driven more by economics than by a choice.
How are our meat prices, and obviously we're not talking about the kosher market, which is the market that I understand, but in terms of our general meat prices in South Africa comparative to other parts of the world?
I think if you dollarize South African prices, we'd be regarded as a very affordable. We'd have cheap meat protein. And I think always the difficulties with our exchange rate when you dollarize, you know, people could argue whether the current exchange rate is a true reference point. But I think, generally speaking, South Africa would compare favorably with South America, so Argentina, Brazil, in terms of
meat-producing countries, yeah.
Correct. And if you compare us to Europe, we're considerably cheaper for really good quality meat. I mean, meat protein across all species in Europe is considerably more expensive than South Africa. And the United States, I think, will probably be on a par. And I think Australia, we'd be quite a bit cheaper as well. So if you did a direct comparison with Oz and you converted at their exchange rate, you know, we would be quite a lot cheaper. Meat is expensive in Australia by and large. But again, I think it depends on the meat you're talking about. You know, some people will always go and compare fillet prices. Well, fillet only comprises 1.4% of carcass weight.
Right.
So it's the creme de la creme of the cuts, and it's not the product that you need to go and compare with. You need to take things like lean beef mince, you know, goulash, so cube meat, cube beef, and sort of more affordable cuts, and then do a comparison. And I think that would be more relevant. But in the you know, I did a comparison, in fact, 2 days ago of in Europe of the meat analog products or the vegetable equivalents, so burger patties and so on, and did this in the Netherlands, and they still have a premium over meat, even though meat is expensive in Europe. So these products, Impossible Whopper, you know, Impossible Beef, all these brands carry a premium over their meat equivalent, and that is because of the cost of some of the ingredients that are in them, like pea flour, it's apparently very expensive. Soya at the moment, largely because of the Ukraine-Russian conflict, it's very expensive at the moment.
Right.
And those are very, very much core ingredients in most of these products. So there's still a way to go before you get parity between meat analog products or plant-based beef equivalents and animal protein.
I know at the time of the beginning of the Second World War, the United Kingdom went on this very smart campaign to try and get people to eat all sorts of the entire carcass. So they would. That's where this whole steak and kidney pie thing developed. Do we? How good are we at that here in South Africa?
Oh no, very 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 good. So amongst our lower income consumer, offal is a huge part of their diet. So ox liver, tripe, and those cuts, which would, you know, they're less appealing to the more affluent consumer, but they are very big. In fact, we have to import a large quantity of ox liver because we can't meet demand out of our local slaughter volume. So, you know, definitely as a let's call it an offal eating nation, we are right up there with any other low-income country. And I think it's really a mechanism of economics where people who've got limited amounts of cash in their purse to pay for food look for cheaper alternatives, and offal is definitely a cheaper alternative, and it's got high levels of acceptability amongst many South Africans, where I think as you go into sort of more affluent communities, people tend to walk away from those cuts and look for the more, you know, the steaks, and they're looking for fillets and those very, very expensive cuts. But definitely, no, South Africa is a very, very large demand, and most abattoirs, yeah, you know, they sell their products, you know, all of their product is sold domestically, nothing is exported. We're actually net importers of bottles.
That's very, very interesting. Peter Gordon, Chief Executive Officer at the South African Meat Processors Association, talking to us about fake meat. Is it healthier? And talking to us about the meat industry in general. It is 6:59. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.